Welcome to Passion to Power with your host, Michelle Zeitlin. She's a creative producer who quote-unquote wears many hats. She's also a talent and literary manager and founded the company More Zap Productions and Management. She develops people and projects across all media. Her guests encompass the gamut, from artists to authors, actors to activists. Please welcome Michelle Zeitlin, Passion to Power.
Today, I have the distinct pleasure of interviewing Mike Goldberg. He is the director of Crosscut Creative. He's also a fine artist. And today we're going to find out what is a creative director in terms of the advertising and marketing industries. Okay, I've got Mike Goldberg sitting in front of his amazing paintings, and he was starting to tell me about his little studio in the West Village, which is also where I lived when I was dancing with the Joffrey. And while he was working with J. Walter Thompson, which is a major ad agency, one of the most competitive for so many decades, Mike started painting. So Mike, tell us about your backdrop.
So here I have a few examples of my paintings. Yeah, so when I was living in the West Village, I lived on Carmine Street. I was working at J. Walter, and I had a studio like three blocks from my apartment in the West Village. It was amazing. It was a whole building filled with artists, and I shared it with a full-time artist. So I went down there, and I was obsessed on figuring out what my style was, because I've been dancing around it, and I just focused and work day and night on figuring this out. So this one here was from a 2-inch obituary of William Burroughs, black and white. I was looking at it, and that little face inspired me. So this is 4 feet tall, and that was 2 inches. And I worked on that for a couple of months. That was one of my first ones. And you know, I figured it out. So I use oil bars, which is compressed oil paint in a stick form. And I use my fingers to work it into raw wood. So I would find wood on the streets of New York, right? Pick up plywood, yeah, because it's all over the place, right? And I bring it back to the studio, and I use the paint and I use my fingers. I don't use brushes to work the paint into the wood because I like the texture.
You don't use a paintbrush at all?
No, I use sometimes. Yeah, sometimes I use fine details, some brushes over there, but yeah. I usually most my hands and the oil bars are kind of like draw painting. So I grew up drawing. So I was kind of a draftsperson first. I studied in Boston privately with a man named Robert Cormier in a studio. He was a character in the Fenway Studios. And I was just out of college. And so for example, he was École des Beaux-Arts, French Academy. I spent 3 months 8 hours a day on one drawing, 3 months. And he'd come in every day and criticize me. And yep, 3 months. And
it's well, French, so of course he criticized you.
So I learned in the very traditional style, and then I wanted to break away from that. And that's kind of what this is a little bit of a breaking away.
Are all these pieces of plywood?
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. I love this old man.
That's on redwood.
Wow.
That's recent. There's a place in Berkeley. I'm out in San Francisco. There's a place in Berkeley, California that sells amazing wood. So that's a 2-inch piece of old rotting redwood. And I painted on that.
And that was it. Does that help give the wrinkles in his face?
Yeah. I work with the lines. Yeah.
That's incredible. And this
guy here, I'm still working on it, is Kenny Shopson, famous restaurateur in the West Village. There's a whole background of him. There's a documentary on him. He passed recently, sadly, but one of my favorite people, and he had this restaurant. He had a profile in the New Yorker of him by Calvin Trillin. So he's a major player in New York.
I gotta tell you, have you seen the Hockney exhibit that they did at LACMA? I mean, it was before the pandemic, but there's a whole series of interview paintings that Hockney did in yellow chairs.
Yeah, I love Hockney. Yeah, I have seen it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very Hockney-esque with the wood floor and the very bold graphic background, and then a yellow chair. And
this is a change. I'm trying to get more bold and graphic, and that one over there is kind of more dark, and it's from an obituary, so.
Yeah, that one seems to play a little more with shadows and light, but the Hockney is very graphic.
Yeah.
Which is that kind of pop culture art, right?
Yeah, Exactly. Yeah.
Very, very cool. So I want to ask you, how did you parlay your interest in fine art into being in the advertising agency? And I know we had a little pre-talk,
yep.
but I want to hear more about your road, your yellow brick road from fine artist to ad agency exec.
Yeah, well, no, it was interesting. Well, before that, I was working in hospitals. So I was going to be a doctor. So I spent a few years working at Boston hospitals. As a side note, yeah, I was had a degree in psychology, and I worked at Massachusetts Mental Health Center. And at, I don't know, 22, 23 years old, the head nurse and the head mental health counselor secretly got married, and they made me the head mental health counselor. So I was in charge of 100 patients on a locked psychiatric unit with people who committed murder, rape, were violent. Yeah, I was in charge of that. So, yeah.
How is that going to work every day?
You know what? I loved it. I was working 16-hour days, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. Because it was a state-run hospital, not a big budget, so you worked as much as you could. I loved it. It was the most fascinating thing in the world. And as another side note, I kept careful notes on that place and of what I did and the patients, you know, without revealing anything, of course. But years and years and years later, I was pitching a sitcom to Turner Entertainment, and I told them about my experience as a 22-year-old mental health counselor on a psych ward, and we produced it. We produced a webisode series based on a sitcom based on my life. So.
Yeah, that sounds like something you're going to have to bring back for television with all the streamers.
Yes, exactly. So I was not making a whole lot of money. I was studying art. I was in Boston, and I ran into a buddy of mine from college, Boston University. He's a big time marketer. He went on to become a CMO, CEO, sports, all sports stuff. He was an Olympic class athlete, and he was a good friend. And I ran into him and said, "You've got to come play softball with my buddies from Hill Holiday, and meet them because they, And I had no idea about advertising, so I met these guys and they were fantastic, and they introduced me to some classes. I started taking classes, and I loved it. So I went from this very isolated, space where I'm getting criticized by Mr. Cormier, right, by myself, to collaboration, which is what I really loved. It was great. So there's a great balance. And then I decided, you know what, I got to do this in New York. So I moved to New York, and I got a job at Gray Advertising, and then DMB&B, and probably 15 to 20 other places between staff and freelance. So the journey began. Yeah, so the first thing I did when I got to New York was sign up with School of Visual Arts, which is a great school. I mean, it's advertising, it's design, it's painting, filmmaking. It's a really well-known school. I went to advertising. So a lot of high-level ad folks, creative directors who were working full-time, taught classes at night, which is great. You're getting firsthand experience from some famous ad folks. And the big thing that they were trying to teach was, it wasn't about just the copywriting, it wasn't just about the design, it was about the big brand strategy. How are you helping a company with big ideas?
In terms of your business, talk about concept. You even said aha, which becomes kind of almost a euphemism, the aha or big ideas. Those become kind of the go-to, slogans. But explain what that actually means.
Yeah. So, I mean, you got the famous ones like, just do it for Nike. And so, not that am I the expert at that, but I have my opinions. So if we're going to take the famous classic example of Just Do It, they took shoes, right? Rubber and canvas, and they turned it into the human condition. It wasn't about the shoes, it wasn't about the quality necessarily. I mean, the quality is important, but it was about what you do with the shoes as a human being. Don't stop, don't give up. It's, these shoes are representative of, I can do something with my life. It's just bigger than just shoes. So that's how you train to think in terms of helping companies. Even for a smaller company, Finagle Bagel is a Boston-based restaurant chain. Finagle Bagel, they have 25 stores, right, in Boston. They make great bagels. They bake them the old-fashioned way, you know, boil and bake them, right? And my thought was, five bagel bakers who live and breathe bagels in a bagel bakery, okay?
I say that five times.
Right. So I created five characters who are bagel bakers, but they aspire to bigger things. But in the end, they just know bagels. They know bagels better than anyone.
So that's fantastic.
Yeah, they make great bagels. So it's about, so that was also, I was thinking in terms of sitcom. I love comedy, so I was thinking in terms of sitcom. These five guys could go on to make an ABC sitcom, right? So they're characters. So I cast well, and then I shot made five commercials, five webisodes, and yeah, and you know, they're...
So they were live action, they weren't animated, guys.
Okay, live action, yeah, live action, yes. We shot it in there. They had a football field-sized bakery. We shot it in there, and yeah, it's a blast. But that's
we had a big bakery when I grew up in Madison, Wisconsin. I think they were the first big Jews to move to Madison, and it was called Bagels Forever. Same thing. It was like an enormous factory.
Right.
And it just brought such an incredible industry. Who would have thought to Madison, Wisconsin, to bring a bunch of bagels?
I've been to Madison. I shot a Mentos campaign in Madison.
Oh, is that where you shot Mentos? Yeah, tell me about that Mentos in Madison. Well,
so there, yeah, that was a combination of a lot of things. Production, PR, and what I would bring again was this idea. And the PR company got a 18-year-old freshman, a real freshman. And on his first week of school, he was going to hand out 43,000 packs of Mentos to 43,000 of his closest friends. So there's like about 43,000 people at Madison, Wisconsin. It's crazy how many huge campuses. It's a great school.
Great school.
And it's huge. So we shot for a total of 10 days, and we just had him doing all kinds of events. And he was, you know, it wasn't just handing out. It was, nothing will stop Sam, this 18-year-old freshman, from handing out gum. So we gave him all kinds of obstacles. And that was a blast. Again, something conceptual instead of just the rote handing out of gum and filming that. That's not interesting. It's like what he does, all the obstacles in between him handing it out. And so
it's sort of early social media.
Well, I invented social media. I'm kidding. But I created a new beverage for Coca-Cola a long time ago before Facebook. And the whole idea was, big idea, life is full of mixabilities. So it was a mixer. It was a lot of mixers. Coke was carrying Schweppes and Canada Dry in the distributorship, not their own. So they said, that's crazy. Let's make our own. So I was in the lab in Atlanta making flavors. I designed the packaging, the whole thing. And it was going to launch globally and started off in South America. And the whole idea was life is full of mixability. So it was about cafe and mixing all kinds of people and events. And it was about being social. They made some money. It's pretty small.
So you sent me over some examples of briefs, which I requested. In the event business, we call them RFPs, request for a proposal. Is it kind of a similar idea?
No. So the RFP is, you know, what you get to apply for, you know, you want to apply for this project, this account. And sometimes it's capabilities, usually it's capabilities of what you can do. The brief comes internally from the agency by the account person and the strategist. And they've done their analysis, they've looked at the brand, they understand, you know, the specific project, what's the audience, what's the budget, you know, what's the insights is the most important thing out of that. What are the insights? So if it's for Verizon, so Verizon spent like $1.7 billion a year at McCann, right? And and so, you know, you get briefs every day on multiple projects. What's the family plan? So the family plan, Sprint and T-Mobile are cleaning up. How can we take market share from T-Mobile and Sprint? So here's some insights. Here's what we're targeting. You know, here's what we're thinking. And then my job is to take that and interpret it and come up with creative.
And the creative is generally a write-up. It's an idea.
It's an idea, but then, you know, you're getting into details. You're making storyboards, you're making mood boards, storyboards, copy. You're getting down to what it's going to be.
Tell me what a mood board is.
I'm not a big fan of mood boards, but it's interesting. This last biotech agency, they're big on mood boards. So it's a step-by-step process to take the client into this world of what you're thinking, because sometimes clients do not have the visualization to understand, you know, what it is. So we're thinking, you know, these kinds of colors, this kind of feeling. You're pulling scraps from stock books, and now you're pulling scrap digitally, of course. And you know, we're thinking of this kind of mood, and this, it's dark, or it's funny, or it's lighthearted, and get them in the mood.
Yes, kind of like tone, huh?
Yeah. Sometimes it's necessary. But, you know, I think if you have a clear idea of the concept and you articulate it, you know, they'll get it.
So who's the person representing the brand that generally brings the account to the ad agency?
Your brand manager. Yeah, your brand manager is on the client side, and they'll ultimately report to the chief marketing officer. So, again, it's an interesting time we live in. A lot of people in this biotech world, they just don't have any experience with video or brand. So you really have to take them through it step by step.
So what are you working on now, Mike?
Just finished I remote directed a project that was in Connecticut from here, which is kind of interesting.
Wow. Something I
wrote. Yeah, for an insurance company. I can't say too much about it yet. It's still not launched, but I just did that. We did five videos in a day shoot. It's okay. The remote's okay. I think it's better that I be there. I'm working with actors remotely. It's kind of interesting. So
you work with actors?
Oh yeah, that's what I love. So, which again, it's changed where there's a lot of video work where you're working with CEOs talking about their story. And I'd rather be working on conceptual things with actors. That's what I think. So, I am now fully vaccinated, and I've got three comedies that I'm waiting to launch. The Finagle of Bagel is an example where it's not just commercials, but like I said, they could have been a sitcom for a network, you know, taking these five characters.
Feels like Norman Lear.
Yeah.
And I think he's like 98 and still working, so.
He's amazing, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. I could see Norman Lear doing Finagle of Bagel.
Yeah.
So wait a minute, you said analytical, creative, what was the other one, strategic?
Yeah.
Are those a good bullet points?
Yeah. Well, I come from psychology, so I'm analytical. I think a good creative is a good strategist as well. You know, you want to set yourself up for a good creative, so be a good strategist first. And then I'm blending it with entertainment. So I did something for the Weather Channel, right? Here's a case study for you. There was no brief. I wrote the brief. The Weather Channel app had zero downloads for 90 days. Zero downloads for 90 days. So they were tweaking their algorithms, their Facebook buys, and doing all these digital things, and nothing was happening. And they had no content. There was nothing for people to grab onto. So they came to me and my production partners, and I pitched them this idea about bad weather seekers, because the app is really cool. It's very sophisticated. You can track thunderstorms. You can do all these things. So it's not for people who want to put on a raincoat and hide from weather. It's for people who love weather. They're seeking weather. So I came up with this campaign, and they loved it. They bought it. And it was the first, you know, again, it's better to see it, but the first video was 12 young folks dressed as sponges seeking a weather storm so they can go mudsliding.
Right. That's wonderful.
Right. So this was like this, we shot this, you know, high level, you know, really, you know, like an action film. And we shot two other ones. The other one was Carbecue, which is five huge guys from Wisconsin. The biggest guy was, he was like 20 years old. He was 6'8", 320. And they were grilling meat on car hoods because when it's too hot, you don't go inside and use air conditioning. You go outside and you grill meat on car hoods. So,
oh my God.
It got 5 million organic views in a week on their
5 YouTube. Million?
5 million. And then it got an additional 20 million because they ran it on broadcast on the US Golf Open over a 4-day weekend. So it got an additional 20 million.
Speaking of bonuses, so how do you bill for this kind of work? Is it you estimate your time or your worth? Or, I mean, how do you come up with your billing?
Yeah, as people keep saying, you know, you don't bill for the time, you bill for the past 25 years I've been thinking of these things. Yeah, it's changed. People don't understand the value of, again, I just finished a project with a couple of partners and for a healthcare digital app. And, you know, great people, really nice, but again, no experience with branding, never mind video. So they don't understand the budgets. It's very, very tricky. And we're trying to teach them, but that's part of the job. Now you build for the value of the project. Yeah, it's tricky. Sometimes we offer, we'll do a percentage of sales based on this concept, you know, so.
What do you want this audience to know about you and about the work that you do?
Yeah, I think I have an original approach to things. I certainly took a while, which is natural, but I've got a style to how I approach things. I love the whole idea now of episodic, webisodic, to tell stories. I go back to the Finagle Bagel. I did a thing for Popeyes with. Popeyes was two guys out to save the world from bland chicken, bland being KFC, right? Popeyes is spicy. So my partner and I, you know, we did this at Hill Holiday in New York.
Isn't Popeyes generally like the kind of soul food audience too? More urban? Yeah.
And we did 15 to 20 commercials of these two guys. And it was an ongoing series. So I love that idea of following recurring characters as they in their ups and downs of their daily life around the brand, you know, and
sort of the Kenan and Peele of Popeyes.
Yeah, I'll take that. Love those guys. So yeah, what I want to do is engage the audience and I can't wait to see what they do next. That's the mantra. I can't wait to see what they do next. And you build it around the brand. It's gotta come out of the brand. It's gotta be natural. So
how many stories do you have going back to your days in the healthcare facility in Boston? Could you kind of come up with a sitcom today about that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, I've written it. Yeah, I've written it. So it's a tricky fine line. You got to, you know, it's about taste. Careful.
We're certainly in a time where everyone's mental health is questionable.
Yeah. The original premise of the series was that the staff are crazier than the patients.
Right, like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah, one of my favorite books, favorite movies. It's just one of the best movies ever made. So, that was true. That was true for my
Nurse experience. Ratched.
Yeah, true for my experience as well. I've got. What I'm doing now is I have a business plan. I'm making high level short form pilots, 5 to 10 minutes of my ideas and a few of my comedies. I got a documentary and I want to cast it correctly. I want to shoot it correctly, have the right locations, then use those as my calling cards. That's what I want to do. And then see if I can build using my marketing skills, see if I can build my audience for those pieces. And then possibly do I have leverage to have a conversation with the Netflixes, the Amazon Primes, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what I'm trying to do now. And so as things get better, and hopefully they are, get back out there, but I'm ready to go. And so that's my big And I was always a film fanatic. I'm a Francophile, French film fanatic. And, you know, the 70s, from The Conversation to The Godfathers to, you know, Deer Hunter and Apocalypse Now and Taxi Driver. That's my...
Who are some movie of your favorite directors?
I love Coppola, I love Scorsese. Hal Ashby, one of the best directors.
Big great fan.
Blocking out the name of my favorite movie with the older woman and the young guy.
Another time we'll have to just write. She lives in a train car. He does, right?
Yeah.
It'll take 2 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my objective right now is to start making these comedies, because I think it's all blended together, brand, entertainment, and so that's where I want to be. And I got a documentary in the works as well. In the West Village, I lived on Carmine Street. There was a great video store called Evergreen. And there was a character there named Paul Nelson. And, you know, he was in his 50s, 60s. He always dressed in the same clothes. He had this kind of cabbie's cap and a vest. And he didn't say too much, except when people tried to rent an Arnold Schwarzenegger or an Adam Sandler film, he'd yell at him and he wouldn't rent it to him. So and no one knew anything about him. He was just kind of this, you know, character amongst the 20-year-old video store clerks. And then this article started going around during the advent of the internet. And it said, it was, whatever happened to Paul Nelson? And it turns out he was the father of rock criticism, rock journalism. He wrote cover articles of Bob Dylan for Rolling Stone, Warren Zevon. He mentored David Bowie and Rod Stewart, wrote a book with Rod Stewart. And he championed Bruce Springsteen. And it was amazing. It went on and on and on and on. So got the last footage of him before he passed over 10 years ago, and got a reunion with him and Kurt Loder and David Frick, the editor of Rolling Stone at the time. And got some footage. So I'm trying to make that into, he's the last of a dying breed. He was one of a kind. So he's an important character in rock and roll history.
I want to go back to the ad world for a second, because I met you because of my interview with Andy Bateman at Sid Lee. Yep. And it seems that at a company like that, which is a design company, a concept company,
right,
an account, you know, they date the accounts, they keep them current. There's so many ways that a young person starting this business could fit in. So I'd love to hear from you, you know, some ideas and advice. If someone were trying to pursue a career like this, what do you think is a good way in?
Oh, you gotta have to have the portfolio. You have to have that portfolio. And, you know, I've looked at a lot of portfolios, as we all have, right? And you've got to, you know, I talked about finding my style, like in my artwork, and it took a lot of time and effort and obsessiveness to figure that out, as well as my voice and my style in, you know, my episodic Finagle of Bagels and Popeyes thing. It takes a while, but you gotta keep plugging away and you gotta experiment. And now that we have, you know, these, go out and shoot on a daily basis. Keep playing with your, if it's video you want to do, which video is a huge part of, you know, of advertising and what we do. But you gotta figure out what your portfolio voice is. And the only way to do that is to shoot, think, write on an hourly basis, a daily basis, until you find it. But you're not gonna get into a Sid Lee without a great portfolio. And what I didn't do is I didn't go, School of Visual Arts is good, but there was some other hipper schools at the time. I like the Miami Ad School, which was connected to Crispin. And those are good entryways into schools, into advertising agencies. So you got to do a little research on what getting the proper education, and maybe it's just a year or two after college, but That's where you build your portfolio. That's where you learn to think conceptually. That's where you learn to think conceptually and then take that and make that big leap into reality. You know, how is it executed? Having an idea that's not well executed, it's kind of a waste.
So now at this stage in your career where you've worked at some of the biggest ad agencies and you've had direct contact with big companies like the biotech, and you've been on staff, but you've also been on work. What do you think is your calling card? How do people think of you and find you?
That's a good question that I am wrestling with right now. And I think it's me putting stuff out more often, you know, me taking advantage of social media more often, and I'm starting to plan it up. So I've got relationships with a bunch of production companies. That's what I've been doing, is building relationships with production companies. And we are really ramping it up to start producing a bunch of different content we're gonna put out there. When you put stuff out there, people see it, they come to you. For my art, my plan is I'm gonna tell 1 minute stories about these characters. So I'm gonna sit here like this, and I'm gonna have one of these paintings behind me, and I'm gonna tell that 1 minute story that I wrote about these characters, and I'm gonna start posting those on Instagram. So put stuff out there, but only put stuff out there that you believe in. Don't put crap out there. You know, back in the day, you're judged by the worst thing in your portfolio, unfortunately. You probably shouldn't be, but people judge you. Well, if you're capable of doing this mediocre thing, I'm worried. So just, it's not about more, it's about the best stuff, you know, whether it's 5 pieces, 8 pieces, don't put in 45 pieces.
And this isn't an online portfolio, something like a website, a Squarespace, anything, just that where you can post the different items.
Yeah, it's all, no more laminations.
Right, you're not walking in with that black briefcase anymore and knocking on doors on Madison Avenue. Okay, well, listen, I can't tell you what a joy it's been. And I know we're going to have ongoing conversation because I'm going to find a way to get Finagle Bagel on TV if you don't get it to Norman Lear. And I know that the fact that you want to look at actors, that's a great way in here because that's, you know, I have some of the best. In fact, one of my clients worked on Curb Your Enthusiasm yesterday. Really? With an incredible cast I'm not even allowed to talk about, but one of my biggest crushes. So she sent me a photo of this actor. I was like, oh my God. Yeah, well, very exciting. Huge. Yeah, it
that's
is huge.
Because let's talk actors. The casting is everything. Cast yeah. well, and my job as a director writer is a lot easier. So.
One of my biggest breakout actors was a non-union, unknown, hip-hop dancer, stand-up comedian from the Philly Projects, who became the first African-American spokesperson for Diageo Brands Tanqueray, and that was my big gray advertising contact.
Wow.
That was a huge campaign.
Tanqueray, I remember that.
Yeah. I'm Tony Sinclair. Are you ready to Tanqueray?
Oh, yeah. No, I saw that. Yeah. I remember that campaign well. I was going, oh, yeah.
It was at some great production companies. They had anonymous content, and they had everybody involved with that.
That was huge. I love that campaign. That was huge. I almost forgot about it until you reminded me.
It was a fantastic, and he won that over Lawrence Fishburne and the Wayans brothers, and they were looking for a Black Brit, and he was from Philadelphia, so he invented this sort of funny, you know, like British Isles accent, and with the big parting in his teeth, Rodney Mason's the actor. Yeah. Anyway, it launched him, and it was an awesome, he got to shoot in India. Remember the BMW film, which was a breakout? Talk about storytelling. It was like a long, what they call a long form commercial, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it was like a James Bondish feel of driving a BMW. So he did a couple of those long form commercials in India, and they created like a Bollywood campaign with Tanqueray. It was amazing.
And that's what, you know, good advertising can do, and it's fun, and people enjoy it. So
yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much from the medical profession to the design profession, art and writing good copy and Finagle Bagel. I think you've had quite a great story to share. And I want to watch those little Instagrams you're going to post about your paintings, because I'm sure they're all great story characters. And I am signing off now with Mike Goldberg, and I know we'll be talking soon.
Thanks, Michelle.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.